The opening sentence of today's gospel is fully half of the text. It's over 85 words long, and it makes up one sentence. A little more than 40 years ago, part of my assignment was to teach in a local high school, and I taught composition and grammar. And it was in those days that students still diagrammed sentences. And one of the assignments I gave them was to take the opening sentence of St. Luke's Gospel and diagram it. The church puts before us two figures. Both of them take the scroll, and both of them read. The first is Ezra, and the second is Jesus of Nazareth. Now, to understand what is happening in the first reading, we have to look at the context of that reading and something about what had been happening to the people of Israel. In the year 586 BC, the Babylonian Empire conquered Israel, moved into the city of Jerusalem and destroyed the city, destroyed the temple, and took the productive citizens of the city into exile into Babylon, and left behind those who were aged, those who were sick, those who were peasants on the land, those who would be no great help to the Babylonian Empire. And for more than 50 years, these exiles lived in Babylon. They were denied their language, their traditions, their customs, their religion. Most of those original exiles died within the first 50 years, and so a second generation of Israelites grew up in Babylon. But most of that generation began to feel comfortable in exile. They made friends with the culture, they spoke the language, they participated in the religious practice. Around 530 BC, a little over 50 years after the exile began, Cyrus, the king of Persia, conquered the Babylonian Empire. And he set free the Israelite people. He told them to go back home, to go back to their country, to their city, to rebuild Jerusalem. And he gave them resources to do that. He gave them money and he gave them material that would help them do it. Most of the Israelites chose to remain in Babylon. Only about 5,000 chose to return. The journey was a fairly long journey, took about 4 months. And this group of 5,000 repatriated Israelites was led by two people, the priest Ezra and Nehemiah, who became the governor of the city. When they returned to Jerusalem, they found not only had the city been physically destroyed, but the people who had been left had broken up into small clans and groups and factions and warred with each other so that there was no civil society there. There was no security there. From 530 BC until 516 BC, the city was rebuilt. The temple was rebuilt. The walls of the city were reconstructed. The doors were secured. And during that same period of time, while Nehemiah was overseeing the building of the city, Ezra was restructuring the life of the people, so that there could be some semblance of order, some civility some way in which daily life could go on. When they had arrived in the city, they cleared away all the rubble. And as they cleared away the rubble from the temple, they discovered the scroll of the law. For more than 50 years, this people had not heard the word of the law. The law is what you and I would regard as the first five books of the Old Testament: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. This was the word of the Lord. And that's where the story picks up. This is 516 BC, and the people are gathered in the open square, and Ezra begins to read the scroll. So for the first time in more than 70 years, these people were listening to the word. The adults, men and women, and young people who were able to understand. And this was a new beginning. This was the establishment of a new era. This was, if you will, a new creation. This was the moment in which God was doing something new with this community. And we're told in the text that the scriptures were read, and then they were interpreted. And throughout the tradition, both Jewish and Christian, the revelation of God is found in two sources: the written word and the tradition, the interpretation. Okay, 500 years later, Jesus returns to his hometown. And as is his custom, he goes to the synagogue on the Sabbath and he stands up to do the reading, and he's given the scroll of Isaiah, and he opens it to a particular point, and he begins to read. And the part that he reads is a part of that prophecy that was written while the people were in exile 500 years earlier. Jesus reads the text, and then he sits down, and he begins to interpret it. He begins to teach. So just as the Levites taught after Ezra read, so Jesus teaches after he reads. And what Jesus says to that group of people, that gathering of his neighbors, he says, this very day, this moment, this passage is coming alive in your midst. This is a new era. Something new is happening. Something new is being born. The old is being put aside, and the new is called to life. Well, why does the church put these readings before us today? I would suggest that we are at the beginning of a new church year, or very close to that. And between now and Thanksgiving time at the end of November, Sunday after Sunday, we're going to reflect on the passages from the Gospel according to St. Luke. And what the church wants to say to us is that the Word of God is engaging. The Word of God is alive. The Word of God is dynamic. The Word of God is living. You know, there's that old riddle: if a tree falls in the forest and if there's no one there to hear, is there a sound made? Well, if the word is spoken and there is no hearing, is that really a word? The church says no. That the word demands a hearing. The word demands engagement. The word is alive. The word is not the dead letter on the page. That in that word, God meets us. God engages us. God does something new. Something new is born every time we hear that word in faith, every time we read that word prayerfully. That is, if we are open to that, that's if our hearts and minds are open to that, that's if we're ready to accept that. And that's what the church says to us. As we enter into this year of Luke, let us take that word, the word that is given, that vital, alive, dynamic word of God, that very presence of God, and recognize that when we listen to it in faith, week after week, when we read it prayerfully in our own private time, that the Lord is calling us to something new. And just as those Israelites returned from exile were called to something new, and just as Jesus called his contemporaries in Nazareth to something new, so each time the word is proclaimed, that word of God calls us to something new. As I mentioned last week, there's going to be a second collection after communion, and that collection goes to assist in the relief effort for Haitian refugees. And as I mentioned last week, the resources that we gather will be sent to Feed My Starving Children. Feed My Starving Children is an international refugee service that is home-based here in the Twin Cities. It provides meals, provides millions of meals every year to third world countries and to places that are experiencing devastation. Normally, in an ordinary year, 25 million meals would be provided by Feed My Starving Children to the people of Haiti. Because of the earthquake, the need is to double and to triple that amount to provide 50 or 75 million meals this year. I mentioned to you that these nutritious, healthy meals cost 17 cents apiece. So that means for $1.70, you purchase 10 meals. For $17, you purchase 100 meals. For $51, you purchase 300 meals. It's a good way to focus on what can I do. Everyone from the youngest child to the oldest adult has the means to do something in this project. At the 5 o'clock mass last night, there was a sandwich bag that was filled to the brim, almost bursting with coins. And it was a first grade student who had opened up his piggy bank and divided it equally. Half he would keep and half would go to Haiti. But he brought that bag as his gift to feed kids like himself who are without food. There are a lot of things that the Haitian refugees need. But if they don't get medical care, and if they don't get food, and if they don't get clean water, then all the rest of it doesn't make any sense. We've got to make sure that people are healthy, that they're well fed, and they have clean water before they can move on to anything else. So the second collection is for that purpose after communion. You may make a check out to St. Matthew's, or you may make the check out to Feed My Starving Children. We'll make sure that all of that gets to them. And you may do that during the coming weeks, too. I mean, this need is going to be there for a long time. So if next month or 2 months from now you wish to do that, that certainly would be well received, and that certainly would be well used.